Welcome back to the show. Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you. Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic, embarking on hour number two. And of course, as you know, the 9 o'clock hour here on the program means it is time to go inside the ropes.
For a quick look at a number of hot topics in the world of golf this week, let's go inside the ropes.
It is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number one, Patrick. Got a couple of LPGA topics here to start, and I'll give you number one. The season finale, the LPGA Tour Championship, it's still without a sponsor, but now it has a venue and a format. And we realized last year on the 2008 LPGA Tour season, the LPGA Tour Championship was here in our very backyard at West Palm Beach at Trump International for the ADT Championship. That's no longer the case. It's now in Houston. It's going to be the weekend of November 19th through the 22nd, and it will be played at the Houstonian Golf and Country Club. The season-ending event will have a 120-player field. The LPGA Tour will cut to the low 70 after 36 holes, and then a second cut to low 30 after 54 holes. So a similar format to the old ADT Championship, but of course the field is much larger, almost four times as large. ADT Championship used to have a 32-player field, cut to 16 after Friday, cut to 8 after Saturday. Tour Championship is owned by IMG. They will fund the tournament and try to recover the approximate $4 million outlay through presenting sponsors if they can't find a title sponsor. It marks the first time in the Tour's season-ending championship history that it will have a full field. Your thoughts on the new format and the new venue?
Now, are they playing for $1 million again?
Good question. I don't know if the winner will get $1 million. I doubt it, because you've got 120 women in this field, and half of them will make the cut, so about half of them will make money instead of just 32 players getting paychecks as it used to be. So I don't think the winner gets $1 million, although I don't know that for sure.
Okay, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I don't like the location. I don't like the time of year you can't do anything about. That's the season ending. I'm fine with that. But I don't like it in Houston. Houston, at least in West Palm, at least down here, you have some of the snowbirds coming down at that time of year. So you did have a chance to get some decent crowds for that. I don't know who goes to Houston in November. So I don't think the venue's good. Not having a sponsor yet is kind of inane to me. You've got to have the sponsor. You want the person or the company behind the tournament to be playing it up, to be running ads, doing what they need to do. IMG, I guess, can do whatever they can do in the interim, but I don't understand not having a sponsor. And the format, I don't like that. This is like essentially a regular tour event. The fun thing about having it in West Palm and having it at Trump, besides the venue being so good, was that the format was unique. And whether they're playing for $1 million or not, cutting it down from 32 to 16 to 8 or whatever it was interesting. It was something unique. They didn't do that. They don't do that on any other tour. And I thought that was a neat way to end the season for the women, something unique. And you're not going to have that now. So it kind of reminds – I think it's like the Tour Championship the way the men do it. But I don't know. I don't think there's going to be any buzz with it, Russ, and regardless of who the sponsor is going to be. I don't like the venue. I don't like the format. I don't know. I think it's just going to be another regular tournament.
All right. I think I agree mostly with what you said, Pat, and I'll just end with this. I hope someday that the 32-woman field format and cutting down to 16 after – cutting in half – both days, 16 after Friday, 8 after Saturday. I hope we get that back at some point. There were talks that it might be added to the schedule in 2010 as a season beginning event, kind of almost like the Mercedes Championship on the PGA Tour. The field would be comprised of all the winners from the previous year, and then if you don't have 32, if you don't have enough, which you probably won't, because there's only about 32 tournaments on the LPGA Tour schedule. So if you have multiple winners, you're not going to get that amount. Then you get maybe some wild card picks as well. I hope we get that back eventually. And if it's not 2010, hopefully in the near future.
All righty, Russ, we shall see. Number two going to you. Continuing on the LPGA, LPGA Commissioner Carolyn Bivens says she wouldn't mind players using the social media websites during a competitive round. I'd love it if players twittered during the middle of a round. The new media is very important to the growth of golf, and we view it as a positive and a tool to be used. Bivens says she encourages, in quotes, players to update their Twitter or Facebook pages in the middle of a tournament. Russ, I know you're going to be all for this.
Well, first of all, did Bivens use the right verb? Is it twittered or is it tweeted? I think it's tweeted. I think the verb is tweeted if you're on Twitter. Anyway, regardless, I just think this is dumb. I mean, I think it's a good idea to have players having Twitter pages and Facebook pages. And we know Stuart Sink is on the PGA Tour a big fan of Twittering or tweeting or whatever the verb is. And he posts comments after every single one of his competitive rounds talking about what he did right and what he did wrong. And for all those Stuart Sink fans out there, you can download that information on the internet. But I don't think it's a good idea during the round. Are you kidding me? You're saying Bivens wants her players to be thinking about what they're going to write next, you know, what witty comment they're next going to post during their round instead of worrying about should I hit 3-wood and try to get to the green or lay up with a 5-iron? I mean, come on. This is and then not only that, but there is actually a technical rules centric situation here, a quandary. Using handheld phones or mobile devices is possibly outlawed under USGA rules. The LPGA currently is waiting for a ruling from the USGA. The 2008 rules of golf do not mention using handheld devices. However, they do mention that players cannot use equipment that, quote, assists them in making a stroke in his or her play for the purpose of gauging or measuring distance or conditions that might affect play, end quote. Well, distance measuring devices, cell phones and smartphones, there's now a new application for range finding device on PDAs. So if you have a cell phone on the golf course, you have the chance that could be a range finder because there are applications for it. So I think this is pretty much an open and shut case. Unless the USGA amends their rules against range finders in professional golf, there's no way the LPGA will be able to allow their players to be tweeting or twittering on the course, because they won't be allowed to have PDAs or cell phones on person because they'll have the chance to have a range finder on those cell phones.
I'm going to set aside the rules question because they'll get around this if they need to. If they really want to do this, they'll figure out a way to get this, you know, so it's not a violation of the rules. But I agree with your one point, Russ, you know, about using this during a competitive round. You know, we try to imagine players during a round of golf or during a game, whatever they're playing, that they're concentrating solely on that. I understand that your mind wanders. If you're sitting on the bench in a basketball game, you might be looking in the stands or whatever, not completely concentrating on the game at hand. But we like to pretend that for those couple hours, that's what the players are focused on. And in a round of golf, if you're going to allow people to tweet or Twitter, whatever it is, that tells me that their focus is not completely on that round of golf. That they're somehow not taking it as professionally as I would hope they would. Now, you know, again, I'm old school, and maybe, you know, my beliefs aren't the same. And I understand Bivens and her attempt to connect more with the public and you know, as a PR move or whatever. All this stuff is good, but I still have a problem when they interview coaches or managers during games. You know, in hockey now, they're down there on the ice interviewing, or, you know, behind the bench interviewing the coach while the game's being played. I don't like any of that kind of stuff. I appreciate getting the insight, you know, from sort of a non-invasive type thing where they have just the boom mic over and listening to the caddies and players. That's okay. You're kind of getting an inside view of something, but it's not purposefully being put out there by the players or the managers as something like, okay, I'm going to talk to you during the game, like a baseball manager. Now they talk to them during the game, have them mic'd up, and I just don't like any. Some of it's over the line, in my opinion. I'd rather have them just, if they have microphones on the players or something, that's fine. But actually proactively twittering during a round, I think, is just stupid.
All right. Couldn't agree more. Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you. Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic. This is our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. And it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number three, a non-LPGA topic. So let's move on. Topic number three, Dateline, Fort Worth, Texas. Ian Baker Finch. Palm Beach resident, good friend of the program. He's joined us numerous times in the past. As we know, he won the 1991 British Open, two career victories on the PGA Tour, and one of them, his other career victory besides the British, was at the Colonial 20 years ago this year, 1989. And Baker Finch celebrated his 20th anniversary of his victory by teeing it up this week at the Colonial. Now, after a very nice 2-under-par round of 68 on Thursday, he blew up on Friday, missed the cut by a handful of strokes, and unfortunately is not playing this weekend. So he's doing his daytime duties, commentating for CBS. But the 48-year-old former British Open champion regularly shoots in the mid-60s at home. And despite the good play on Thursday, he says he has no plans to join the Champions Tour once he turns 50. Pat, your thoughts on Baker Finch, good friend of the program, playing this week?
Yeah, I really like Ian. I think he's a great announcer, you know, obviously a great golfer and a friend of our show. But normally I would completely blow up at these things, these token appearances, you know, where Bobby Clampett or somebody goes back and plays at Pebble Beach because he had success there as an amateur or whatever, and you know, hasn't played there in 20 years, and all of a sudden wants to play in the U.S. Open or something. Usually that kind of self-promoting type stuff drives me nuts. But in this case, I really don't have a problem with Ian trying this. He's still relatively young, and I think he wants to see where his game is. I don't think this was a complete promotional thing so that he knew he was going to miss the cut and he could talk about, you know, the golf course or something Saturday and Sunday because he just got to play it. The weird thing is, Russ, do you think Ian's going to take more from the 68 or the 78 in terms of, you know, his desire to try and play a little bit more? I know he says he has no intention of playing the Champions Tour, and maybe he doesn't, but the fact that he did shoot 68 after not playing on the PGA Tour for like 8 years shows that he still has the game. And the weird thing with Ian is that, you know, with most players as they get older, the short game starts to decline. His short game's still pretty good. It's his driving that is the issue that causes a problem. You know, and then on Friday, you know, the front nine, he just was terrible. I think he was 7 over on the front nine and kind of, you know, got around the back nine in about even par. But except for those 9 holes, he actually played pretty good. So I don't know if he takes more from the 68 as an encouragement that, hey, if I worked on this a little bit, you know, maybe I could play more, or even if he wants to, or the 78 is kind of the reality of, hey, this is where I'm at right now, and, you know, I really don't have a chance to compete on this. But long story short, and big picture, I think it's good that Ian did this, and I don't think it was a publicity stunt or anything like that. And it's a shame that if he ultimately doesn't want to, you know, try and compete more, because, you know, it's just nice. Like last year when we saw Greg Norman at the leaderboard with the British Open, and Ian Baker Finch for a brief time, you know, amongst the leaders on Thursday, you know, it's just names from the past that you don't see anymore.
Well, obviously, Ian is a very good friend of the program. He's a great guy. I call him the embodiment of that term, salt of the earth. He's one of those types of individuals, and he'll pretty much give you the shirt off his back. He's that kind of guy. Love seeing him play well on Thursday. It was painful for me to see him blow up on Friday. I was hating that. But I hope we see more of this. Not him playing poorly, but him just playing at all, you know, for public consumption. Because we know he plays, he's like a +4, I think, right now. So that's very good. I mean, that most pros are in that area of +3, +4, +5, +6, +7. So he's, you know, he's playing well. He's probably putting in a bunch of mid-60s to high-60s for his handicap at his club course, or at you know, at his home, which is the Bears Club. And he is a local, of course, South Floridian. I hope we see him play more. He says he has no plans to join the Champions Tour. That's probably what he feels, but I hope he does play in a couple of Champions Tour events here and there, because I'd love to see him more.
Who, and by the way, Russ, who still wears their glove putting? I mean, Nicklaus used to do it. You never see guys do that, and Ian Baker Finch still
wears a good
glove.
Point. There's a few guys out there. There's some guys that don't wear gloves at all, like Freddie Couples. That's never true. Wears a glove.
All right, Russ, number four goes to you, our final topic. The man in basketball circles known as Mr. Clutch in bringing his skills to the world of golf, as NBA all-time great Jerry West has been named executive director of the PGA Tour's Northern Trust Open. It was announced on Thursday. In his newly established role, West will educate the community about the Northern Trust Open and all that it has done and will do for Los Angeles, and will work to further engage the community through public appearances and speaking engagements and drive leads both in sales and support. Russ, your thoughts about the former model for the NBA logo, Jerry West, now working in the golf arena.
That's right, Mr. Logo. Well, let's you just read his roles. Let's add to that list of roles get Tiger Woods back in L.A. Because I think this is I don't want to say this is totally why the Northern Trust Open is doing this, but I think the Tiger Woods connection has something to do with it. As we know, Jerry West from the world of basketball, big-time NBA players Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan are on Tiger's speed dial, so to speak. They play a lot of golf together, and I have no doubt in my mind that Jerry West is going to try to lobby both Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan to come play in their Wednesday Pro-Am, and perhaps that will bring Tiger Woods back to the Riviera Country Club, a place that he has never won. In fact, the L.A. Open, now known as the Northern Trust Open, played at Venerable Riviera every year since the mid-70s, is the only place Tiger Woods has played more than five times on the PGA Tour and never won. It's the only place. And he hasn't played at Riviera, I think, in 7 or 8 years. It's been a while since he's been back to Riviera. And actually, in 1992, the L.A. Open was the very first PGA Tour event to ever give Tiger an exemption to play as a youth, as an amateur player. So I think part of why they're bringing Jerry West in, and listen, he turns 71. He just turned 71 on Thursday, so it was his birthday the day that they announced this. 71 years of age is pretty old to be running a golf tournament. I don't want to be ageist or anything, but let's be honest. He's probably not going to be involved in the day-to-day events. He's more of a figurehead, so to speak, and I think the main role for him coming to L.A. and coming to be part of this, Tiger Woods is from Southern California, so it's almost a slap to the face of the PGA Tour that he doesn't play in his hometown event.
You know, the weird thing is, Rustin, you hit on a bunch of good topics of why Tiger would or wouldn't playing this. You know, they did give him his initial sponsor exemption. Not that Tiger feels any allegiance or duty to play in a tournament just because it gave him a sponsor exemption when he was younger. But that, I think that's a factor. The fact that he's never won there, I think probably deep down does bug Tiger. It's kind of like the Canadian Open with Jack Nicklaus. He was never ever able to win that. And this seems to be the one place that Tiger hasn't been able to win. And maybe as a competitor, it bugs him. And he does at some point want to get back there just to win it and shut everybody up. Although he did play one of the rare times he lost in a playoff to Billy Mayfair was in the L.A. Open.
But so, it wasn't at Riviera that year.
No, that's true.
It was actually moved to Valencia because the I think it was a senior PGA championship was held at Riviera that year, so they had to move the venue.
So, I mean, man, Jamar with a quick thing. So, but my final thought is I think there are reasons why Tiger might want to play there. There are also reasons he doesn't, and I think the older Tiger gets, the more cemented his schedule becomes, and I don't think you're going to see him deviate much the older he gets from what his schedule is.
All right, that was another award-winning edition of the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you, as always, by PGA National Resort and Spa. Russ Evans and Pat Rooney Jr. with you. Real quickly, want to let you know about Transworld Business Brokers. Have you been downsized or outsourced, or if you just had enough of corporate America, take control of your future. Become a business owner. Become your own boss. Transworld Business Brokers has thousands of companies for sale in hundreds of industries. If you've never run a business before, Transworld has franchise opportunities with proven, successful systems for running a profitable business. If you're already a business owner and you're thinking of selling, Transworld can help you get top dollar for your business. Call my buddy, Andy Cagnetta at Transworld Business Brokers for a free, confidential consultation. 800-205-7605 or online at tworld.com, 800-205-7605, or go online at their website, tworld.com. Transworld Business Brokers, matching great buyers with great businesses, one deal at a time. Still to come this morning at 9:30, Charlie Reimer, Golf Channel analyst and former PGA Tour player. But up next, we're going to discuss Phil Mickelson, his wife Amy, fighting breast cancer, and the PGA Tour with a nice sentiment yesterday on a third round Saturday wearing pink. A little Phil Mickelson talk, and his wife Amy is up next. Russ Evans and Pat Rooney Jr. with you. This is Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic.